Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Music Making Can Happen Anywhere and features Jessica Barron in an interview with Alex Ruffner.
Hello, I'm Alex, an assistant editor of the Imagine magazine. Welcome, Jess. Thank you so much for joining me today on this Imagine podcast.
Thank you so much. We're really, our organization is very grateful to be able to build a little bridge with music therapy with you, Alex.
Awesome. I love it. So as music therapists and professionals who encourage music making in the classroom, we know that when we think outside of the box, we create successful music experiences for children of all abilities. In this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to find out how you make music accessible to young learners, what kinds of adaptations you make or assistance you give, and in which ways this support transforms the participation and engagement of your clients or students. So here are 10 questions for you. First, where do you work and what is your role?
I am the founder and executive director of an organization known as Guitars in the Classroom, but also known as Guitars and Ukes in the Classroom since we added ukuleles in 2015.
Wonderful. So what everyday situation comes to your mind when you hear about adaptive music making in the early childhood setting?
Well, the first thing is that there are so many kids in need of adaptive services for whatever is going on. And we know this because so many people who are teaching special education, ECE or TK, sign up for our free classes. So I'm very aware that it's not a specialized experience. It's pretty widespread. So the normal situation would be children who are in a classroom and need to have things at their level changed physically so that they have the capacity to make sounds with them, embrace them in some way, or activate them using whatever assets they've got. And they need individualized instruction that's appropriate for their cognitive level and their curiosity. So things have to be set up in a way that cultivates curiosity and makes it so kids can not only experience it for themselves, but experience it together with other children.
That's wonderful. And I know that Guitars and Ukes in the Classroom, you actually do some specialized training for special education teachers, don't you?
Quite a bit, yes.
What's that program called?
It's called Amaze. We also call it Amazing Music, and we call participating classrooms Amazing Classrooms, and the educators that are enrolled in that work, Amazing Teachers. And Amaze is spelled A-M-A-I-S-E, and that is an acronym for Adaptive Music for Achievement in Inclusion and Special Education.
That's wonderful. I feel like that kind of leads directly into our next question, which is, in what ways can adaptive music making support access and a sense of belonging for young children?
What a great question. I know you've got answers to that one, or you wouldn't be asking. Probably anyone listening has great answers. What I would say is that music is a unifying medium. It brings everybody together. And it does not judge, it does not discriminate. It's something that resonates within every person, whether they have a way of visually showing you or the ways that they experience it are completely internal. We work in home and hospital and transition supports programs here in San Diego and in home and hospital in Los Angeles Unified. And so we work with kids who are homebound and hospitalized learners. And many of those kids have extremely limited ways of showing what they're thinking and feeling. But we have started an initiative we call Measures of Joy. And so we support teachers in our programs to begin to notice the subtle signs of engagement in children who may be unable to express verbally, but they may express large motor or fine motor, what's going on, or visually. So it's looking at all the signs of engagement, all the signs of happiness, And then we're also evaluating their response to different sounds. So we'll equip the people that are working with us on this initiative with a whole lot of different kinds of instruments, everything from bells and chimes to shakers and different kinds of drums, slide whistles, harmonicas, you name it, kazoos. And then they can chart what sounds bring the response and the happiness.
Oh,
so
I
guess
love
that
that
partly answers your question.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I feel like once again, it leads us kind of right into the next question, which is, do you have any tips about how to adapt instruments or music lessons?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Well, you need to watch. You need to see how a child interacts, and you can't judge based on what they've done before, because children, when exposed to music, will do all sorts of surprising things. They might not seem like they can sit up, but when you play a sound that makes them really excited, they may try, right? You may see that they have rigid arms or rigid hands, and you don't think they can hold something. Try to figure out what they can hold. We make picks for guitars and ukuleles out of tennis balls. So we'll make a slit in the tennis ball, and we will take a defunct hotel key card and cut it into that rounded tipped diamond shape of a flat pick, wedge it in, and children who cannot squeeze can still kind of cradle a ball and run it laterally across the strings of an ukulele that is placed face up on a wheelchair tray or on a table, resting on top of rubber shelving liner. And we call that a traction mat. So it's just about getting creative, right?
That's amazing.
If you can't hold something in a normal way, you can look up easy hold grips and see if those very nice, they're non-toxic food grade, what are they made out of, silicone or some kind of a very bendable substance, and they can hold onto things like drumsticks or shakers, whatever you've got. And then also look for the odd things like the toe tambourines and the finger shakers. You can find them easily online. They're not expensive. And maybe a child can move a toe. That toe tambourine is going to be very exciting.
I love that you included a good mix of things that, people can make themselves, and then other things that are already out there. And, sometimes we don't need to reinvent the wheel, and it already exists out there. So how have you meaningfully used assistive technology? I love your ideas about how you can physically change an instrument or a pick or something, but have you used any assistive technology?
Yes, absolutely. There are a few things that we're focusing on right now. The first thing we started using is called a BEAMS unit. It's spelled BEAMZ. And this is a unit that has gone through various iterations. So the newest model isn't in production yet. And the BEAMS company is looking for investors to help them make the newest one, which is pretty cool. But the most recent one has a single post in the middle, and it emits light rays, little laser rays. And the rays coordinate with sounds that are programmed. It's like MIDI in a way, but they're programmed onto your computer. And the current model works with PCs. The old model works with iPads. And a child can make music by interrupting the light beam, either motorically or visually, if they're using Toby eye gaze.
Okay.
So they can change it by instrument. They can chop the sound up. They can make it into long waves. If they've got two sides of the body they can use, they can interrupt and change two instruments at the same time. And the programming for the BEAMS has thousands of songs, and everything is also coordinated with lesson plans and curricular areas and social emotional learning. So it's a really wonderful whole system. So that's the BEAMS interactive unit. We are also starting to work with music apps on iPads. We're doing a training here in San Diego, starting with using the Keezy app and the app Phase Rings. And we're calling it Sound Baths and Soundboards. So this is a way to use the app in a classroom setting so that kids can work collaboratively to create one or the other, and the teacher can facilitate it. So that's pretty exciting. And then we also have a couple wonderful home hospitalist teachers who are programming switches like the and buttons like the Big Mac or the Little Mac, with music so that the kids can actually touch, sensor, and create sounds to their own design and in their own ways. So those are the first things that we're working on, but there will be.
There's so much technology out there and it changes so quickly. It's always fun to hear how, you know, other people are using technology in a variety of settings. Do you have any recommendations for a non-standard music notation for young children?
Well, here's the thing about notation. It's a secondary system. The primary system for music is kinesthetic because you're touching and making a sound. And the next level of it is auditory. So you're feeling vibration, you're hearing vibration, and music is organizing the sound, right? So the visual system of representing it requires visual ability and motoric ability at some level in order to create it. So like phonological awareness is all about hearing sounds and making sounds and stringing those sounds into words. We address music as organized sound. So if you're trying to teach a secondary system of visual representation, kids will experience it in terms of color, right? There may be warm sounds that are warm to them and they'll gravitate to a warm color to note that, or cool sounds, but they also may relate to the duration of the sound or the volume of the sound. So what I love to do, and it's extremely free form, is just put on recorded music or play something live and give the kids everything they need to make art to that sound and allow them to creatively freely express what they're hearing in a visual manner, rather than teaching them a system where they're trying to aim for something that will make them feel like they either got it right or they didn't.
I love that concept and that idea of, you know, notating music is another way to engage in music. And, you know, we don't have to use music notation to be a musician. I first learned how to play music just by ear. So I didn't know how to read music when I first started playing instruments and making music with other people. So I think that's a great idea to have just kind of this free form way to engage with music and to visually put it on paper.
Absolutely. When children are really young, if we're trying to grade them on something that's a skill level above what we would expect them to be able to do, we're really not setting them up for success. Getting into visual notation is wonderful when kids are visually spatially oriented. That's one of their strongest learning modalities. If that's the case, then I'm very traditional and I go with stick notation, because that's something that's going to transfer. And I'll go with syllabication from Kodai. So I'll use orphan Kodai, you know, ta, 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 ti, ti, all of that, because that becomes a language that other people can also speak.
Okay. Those are also great suggestions. So what non-traditional music making environments come to your mind? I know you've mentioned several of these already, such as the classroom or hospital or homebound children. But are there other kind of non-traditional environments that come to your mind?
Well, you know, the thing about it is, if you go back several decades, music was used creatively in classrooms, and teachers took a class called Music for the Classroom when they were credentialing. And these courses were essentially removed from teacher training as teacher training became more and more time limited and higher pressure. And at this point, really great credentialing programs that used to run 22 months have been crunched down to 18 months or 15 months. And so a lot of that training was lost. And that's why we don't think of it as being traditional. But if you go back to the 1960s, every kindergarten had a piano. So there's been a loss and kind of a crisis in early childhood education with the loss of music. So really, music therapists and teachers who can bring music in, whether they're training with us or somewhere else, we're all doing musical restoration. So I think music belongs everywhere. It belongs at the park. It belongs in the car. It belongs in the middle of a diaper change. It is a language we can use to help kids embrace the current moment with songs for transition, to address challenges, as you know, as a music therapist, you can sing wonderful songs with kids that will help them cope with all kinds of difficult, you know, trauma to just disappointment or missing somebody. So I'm sorry not to be more specific, but it just goes everywhere. That's how it
no,
is.
No, I love it. I feel like I really resonate that. And that's something that I tell a lot of the parents that I work with in the hospital, like music can happen anywhere and you can work it into any part of your routine. So in a way, a traditional music making environment doesn't really exist. And I feel like we need to move away from that concept that, you know, you make music in a practice room or like you have to be sitting down at the piano or with your instrument to make music and you have to practice to do that. And in reality, you can just weave it into your everyday life and every single environment can be a music making environment.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the challenge to that is that so many people have not had a positive experience of learning to make music because of it being taken out of public education, because of the commodification of music through the media and this idea that people have to have talent in order to merit the ability to make music. This is all just, to me, it's sacrilege. And it's convinced people that they have to know that they can sing in tune and sound great and deserve applause in order to even open their mouths and whistle a tune or sing happy birthday to a friend. And right. The more we can all do to change that and to remove the fear, remove the barriers, the more music will find its way out. But right now, if you ask people who don't do this the way you do or the way that I do, the natural way to sing something, they'll get very embarrassed and they will refuse that opportunity, or they'll take it as a dare and maybe they'll try, but they'll only get halfway through something and then they'll giggle and stop. So they need help, just like the kids that we're working with. The adults also need these healing experiences with music.
That's wonderful. So what is your top advice for adaptive music making in early childhood settings?
Okay. The first thing is to relinquish all expectations. Do not go in thinking that whatever you thought was a great idea was the greatest idea in the room, because some little squirt is going to have an idea that is so different than what you thought of, and they're going to do something outrageous with that instrument you laid out, whether it's a shaker or a bell or something they can strum. Be ready for anything. So that's my first piece of advice. Be ready for anything. If a child needs to lick an ukulele in order to understand the contour, don't freak out. Let them lick it and then just wipe it down afterwards. We use Waterman ukuleles that are made of a high-grade polymer and are indestructible, and they're from Collar Brand Music. And a child can throw it across the room and you can go over, pick it up, and it will still play. I actually demonstrate that in my professional development workshops, because everybody has to understand when I throw it across the room, it's really okay. And I go pick it up and play it, and they're, oh, because who would do that with an instrument? But, you know, if you're working with two-year-olds, they'll all do that with the instrument. First thing. Second thing is look at the instrument that you've got with an open mind. What are all the different ways that it could be explored? Will it make a sound if it's dropped, if it's rolled, right? Just because it's got a handle does not mean a child's going to pick it up and shake it like a maraca. And maybe they've got the most creative idea you've ever seen. And that's great. So my second piece of advice is whatever they do, mirror, 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 mirror. It will validate. The third piece of advice is once you've mirrored what they're doing to create the sound, have a conversation with the sound. If they instigate something, echo it back. They may do it again and you can echo it back. And then you can start to change the conversation and see if they're going to copy you. And what you'll develop is a musical pattern. And the pattern is the scaffold for other kinds of music. So once you've got a little pattern going with that sound they invented, that's when you can start building in language. You can use a pitch, or you can use a phoneme, or just a consonant sound. and create a pattern with that. And these little particles of music build such excitement and buy-in because it's right at the level of achievability for any child who has verbal or vocal ability. If the kids don't have that, you need to find another way to make the patterns. And the whole thing might be physical and nonverbal. And that can be absolutely just as exciting. So I hope those are helpful.
Yes, those are three great little bits of wisdom there. So this leads us to our very last question. What resources do you recommend?
Well, I think you can pirate anything from any resource if you look deeply. So you probably all have books around that have some music in them. And if you just sit down on a Sunday with your cup of tea and flip through pages, you may discover some old song about a squirrel that you've never heard before, but suddenly you've got an idea to make a squirrel puppet, right? So look in your own backyard. That's the first thing. Second thing, there are a million things online. Third thing, if you don't know how a song goes, you've never heard it before, you've never sung it, there's probably a video of somebody else doing it on YouTube. So definitely you go to YouTube, put search words in, and you may find seven different videos of Bill Grogan's goat, even if you never heard that song before. So YouTube is right at your fingertips. Songs for Teaching is a wonderful website. There are all kinds of resources at songsforteaching.com. And then in terms of our organization, we offer free training for anyone working with children after school hours and on weekends. And you can find us at guitarsintheclassroom.org. We will have fall 2023 classes starting usually the first week of October, with registration starting in September. And then we teach through the year, and we also have options in the summers. So we hope you'll join us for a free class. And if you need an ukulele or a guitar, we have a scholarship and a lender program.
Awesome. Jess, thank you so much for sharing your insights. I loved hearing more about guitars and ukes in the classroom.
Thank you very, very much, Alec.
Thank you for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2023.